Off the ball. Rugby.
O'Gara was also in my face. What the F are you doing? I responded by shaving to punch him.
It was feisty, all right, at the start, that's for sure, you know. There's no doubt about that.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
I loved it as a kid, but I never thought it'd be something that I'd be doing full time, nearly as a job. I thought it was just, it was a hobby. And I sailed this boat 5 or 6 days a week for probably 15 years. It's a lot of time, a lot of time in the boat. It's brilliant as well because anyone can sail this boat. It's very simple. You know, it's from a complete beginner to an Olympic champion. It's kind of designed to be sailed by anyone and everyone. I'm a big believer that the sport should be, you know, if you want to do a sport, you should be able to do it and shouldn't be kind of hindered by the amount of costs.
Sailing is the most open sport in the world. What I mean by that is anything in sailing can happen. You need to be an absolute master of your environment. You need to be able to make decisions constantly.
Sailing is a really challenging sport from a mental perspective. There's just so many variables to contend with. So you have the wind, the waves, the geographical landscape, your competitors, your own boat.
All of these decisions affect what you do. And no matter how good you get at sailing, you will never complete it or master it. You can only get better at it. So you're never finished with the sport. You have the rest of your life. You're still learning.
A lot of Irish people love the sea, love being close to the sea. That's why I encourage more people to get into sailing. You know, it's a sport where you can go and be out in the ocean. And I think the biggest thing is the sort of different perspective you get on the world from the water. You know, you can just look in at, like today we'll be able to look in at Dublin and see the city from a completely different perspective that so few people get to see.
The feeling you get in a boat, like when you get it right with the sail or you get it right with the wave, it's you're being carried by nature. It is indescribable joy and pleasure to do that.
On days like today, there's probably, I don't think there's a better sport in the world.
You definitely feel more alive and exhilarated from being around the ocean all the time. It's a changing challenge. It's always going to keep fascinating you. You know, you can stare at a fire and you can stare at the sea. It's the same thing.
People's perception of sailing is, you know, gin palaces and, you know, going to Monaco and sitting on a yacht in the sunshine. But Olympic sailing and Olympic sailors are super athletes. Battling the elements, making a boat go fast, going in the right direction. It's hard enough when you've got a crew doing it in unison and working as a team. But in Annalise's instance, in a single-handed boat, you're doing all of those jobs by yourself.
I think I'm definitely trying to work with the ocean. You know, it's you don't really have any control over it. You can't control the waves. But in a small boat like this, you've got a lot of control over it. I guess realise how lucky I am to be able to get out and get out in the water and sail and know how to do it.
Introducing yourself to a stranger, no context of who you are, how do you introduce yourself?
Probably at the moment it's like I'm Annalise Murphy and like I'm a bit lost in life. I haven't, I guess I retired from professional sport in 2021 and trying to like find that next step has been really difficult. Like I'm definitely not sad in my life, but I think it is a really hard transition when you wake up every day with this
goal, you know the reason you're getting up, you know the reason you're training, you know the reason you're doing everything. It's for this singular purpose. And then when that's gone, it has been a difficult transition. I guess I haven't found my sort of life purpose yet.
When somebody finishes their Olympic career, it's not a very easy space. And I don't know if it's an easy thing for people outside of sport to understand, because they've spent a lot of their life with the clearest purpose in the world.
That retirement piece is a huge challenge. Like, it's just such a shift in who you are, what you've known for many, many years, how people interact with you.
It's all encompassing when you're in it, and when people move on from it, they may need time to find what their new purpose is.
And you're not tempted to go to the triple Olympian, silver medalist, Volvo Ocean Racer, like the long list of stuff that's there?
No, probably not. I guess they were achievements that, you know, I look back now and I'm so proud of. And I'm so lucky I got to do all of those things. But they're also they're just parts of my life. They're parts of my story that have made me the person I am today. And I think they help me a lot with challenges I face now, but they don't sort of define me as a person. I'm still just, I'm probably still exactly the same person I was, you know, back 15 years ago before I'd done any of the sort of sporting achievements.
Your mom had been to Seoul in 88. So was that something that was, I'm not saying a part of everyday life, but was represented at home?
I think growing up with an Olympian, as like mum going to the 1988 Olympics, she was also a mother at that stage. My sister was born in 86, and then my dad was also a really keen sailor. They actually met sailing down in the frostbites in Dunleary. So it's sort of, you know, full circle being, you know, meeting sailing, and then she's at the Olympics. My dad actually went to the Olympics as their coach because they, at the time, like, they couldn't afford to have a professional coach. And my dad was in the Air Corps, so they allowed him a bit of time off to go and be at the Olympics with my mum. So, yeah, they had a love for sport and being outside. And I think that transferred into us as kids. It was also, I guess, because mum was an Olympian and she did dream of going to more Olympics, but then life, three kids got in the way of that goal, probably.
Like, I mean, there's some parents, like, you know, they're trying to live their dreams through their children, but you know, I was always very keen that they did lots of sports. Sport is fun and it makes you feel good. I think that's how I grew up, and Annelise and Con is, you know, the same.
And then 96 is your kind of first proper recollection maybe of the games?
It is. So I was only six, and I remember it was really exciting because Michelle Smith was doing so well in the pool, and I was being woken up in the middle of the night to watch the Olympics. And I was only six, so I couldn't really understand why I was getting woken up in the middle of the night, but I was told, this is really important. You have to watch this. This is Irish history being made. It was hugely exciting in Ireland at the time that we were having someone that was winning medals in a sport like swimming. That's such a difficult sport to win medals in, which, well, we're now achieving again. But it's that was my first sort of real memory of the Olympics.
So it's family full of sailors, one brother, one sister. You're in the middle, is that right?
Yeah.
And quite competitive with your older sister.
Yeah, my older sister and younger brother are actually very similar, and I was nearly the one kind of, we were all tried to kill each other when we were kids a bit, but I think every family kids try and kill each other.
Like, it's funny, when Claudine and Annelise used to race against each other, and they used to sail each other down the pan to finish last. You know, they were always trying to beat each other.
My older sister, she wanted to go to the Olympics, and I think it was like in 2005 she announced, she's like, I'm going to the Olympics in Beijing. I remember thinking, I was like, all right, that's a bit, you know, that's a lofty ambition. I'd only just moved into the laser radial class at that stage, so I just started training with her, and then all I wanted to do was try and beat her. I saw her as the level to get to, and I wanted to try and get to that. Like, without her there, I never would have probably got to the level that I got to.
And I don't think it was easy for Claudine, as Annelise got faster and faster, and we'd, if I'm honest, we had some contentious training sessions.
And in 2007, I think. We were over in the UK at a British qualifier, and the two of us were doing pretty well in the race, and she turned around and she started shouting at me, saying, "If you beat me in this race, I'm never going to talk to you again." And then we just started fighting, and we ended up coming about last and second last in the race. By the time I was like, we're just both shouting at each other, and we come in off the water and we're like killing each other. And so my mum was like, "I need to do something about this." So she got a sailing coach and sort of sports psychologist over from the UK, who she'd actually raced against in the 470 class when she was competing, a woman called Kathy Foster.
I brought her over to see sort out this sibling rivalry, and I'll never forget, she arrived and she had flip charts and markers.
She said, "I want you to draw out how you see your life in general in 10 years' time." And anyway, so we're drawing away, and I drew an Olympic podium with me standing on the top of it, and I think a few boats in the background, maybe a couple of seagulls or something like that. And my sister, she had an Olympic podium, she had a house, she had a husband and a family, she had that she was a doctor. There was like, her page was so full of stuff, like it was amazing, because her life looked amazing while mine looked very boring. And my sister Claudine said that was the moment she realised that I was probably going to be better at sailing than her, that I just had this one singular focus. That was the only thing I was thinking about at 17, was going to the Olympics.
Incredibly prescient. I mean, Jesus, it was nearly a window into the future. So what happened to her Beijing dream?
The two of us went down to New Zealand for the Olympic qualifiers in 2008. Actually, Ciara Pilo qualified Ireland for the spot at the Olympics. And so Ciara ended up going to Beijing. My sister was, we were happy enough. I think we'd done well for the level we were at the time. But that moment going down to New Zealand, and I think seeing everyone qualify for the Olympics and the emotion that they had, like, I watched the Danish girls were crying because they just missed out. Ciara had got the last spot, and that was the moment where I was like, I want to get to the next Olympics. Up until then, it was nearly like a dream that I thought about but didn't actually think out loud. While there, I was like, this is what I want to do with my life.
Annalise was really clear on her objectives of getting to the Olympics. That clarity of purpose and that drive was there from a really early age with Annalise. It allowed her, I think, to narrow her focus much earlier and also qualify for her games at quite a young age. Like, sailing is a late development sport, and Annalise was winning medals when she was 20 in World Cups.
She was talking about a plan to take over the world, you know. And that's a critical part of it. The person has to have that vision in their head and that imagination to do something. And I definitely felt that then, and that we were lining up to do something like that.
Can you give us any insights into what those conversations were like at home, where you're like, I think I'm headed this way, and I'm sure your parents were like, well, okay, but this thing over here is quite important.
The summer started out really well. I actually won my first big event. It was a Europa Cup in Holland, which was completely unexpected. I didn't think I'd win an event. I didn't even know I'd won it until the last day. And I beat some of my like big competitors in the future, Marit Bomeister, who's now gone on to be the most successful female sailing Olympian ever. And then we went to the World Championships in Japan with my sister, and it was so exciting, I guess, going somewhere so far away.
When the athlete's quite young, it's a real adventure, and there's a lot of new in it. What she was able to do in the boat as she was growing older was more akin to the capability of like the senior men sailors. She was quite an exception.
Had my first day, I did quite well, and then my second day I did a little bit better, and then on my third day I was winning a race, and I had Anna Tunnicliffe, the Beijing gold medalist, right behind me in the race. And I just kept on looking behind me like, she did actually get me by the finish line, because I just kept on looking at her and be like, I can't believe I'm beating Anna Tunnicliffe. So I finished second in that race, and I ended up finishing eighth overall at those World Championships, which was way above the level that I was at the time. And that was probably what changed my life. Like, it was an eighth place qualifies you for world-class funding from Sport Ireland. So after the last race, I called my dad and I was like, Dad, it's like, I'm going to get €20,000 next year to go sailing. And he started laughing at me. He was like, no, you're not. Like, they're not going to give you that money. I was like, no, they are. I was like, I've seen it on the internet. I've done the results. And so then I kind of had the conversation with my parents. So I was like, look, every single girl in the top 20, if not top 30 in the world, are full time. It's like the only real chance I have to improve is to go full time. I need to defer my degree from college. So they were a bit like, they're like, why don't you do it for a year? And if it's not working out, you're back to college. So I was like, yeah, grand. So I deferred my degree from UCD and headed off full time. And like, you know, in 2009, it was really the start of the recession. It was a really tough time for everyone, but so many family, friends, club members, people of the Irish sailing community kind of got behind me and helped me out with like small donations to quite big donations to help me kind of get me through my like first sort of 4 months of full-time sailing before my big money came in from Sport Ireland.
Take a bit of a tangent. What would you say is the podium of the lowest moments of your career?
Yeah.
What's the 3-2-1?
So probably one of the worst. I have a few, but I had a really bad event at the start of 2010. I went to Miami, and I'd gone down to Australia for the winter. I'd had a really successful campaign down there. I'd won the Down Under series. I'd done really well, and then I went to Miami with kind of all this confidence that I'm actually one of the best in the world now. I had a bad first race, and I completely blew up, and I just had, from that moment on, every race was just bad. I just did badly throughout the event. And
when you say blew up, what does that mean?
You start to lose confidence in yourself, and then the harder you try, the worse you end up doing. She was really fast, really good at getting in positions of, you know, being ahead of the fleet and up at the top, and then she would make the most simple, basic errors that like a beginner on a sailing course would make, like she'd fall off the boat or capsize with hardly any wind. And a lot of that was just concentration and, I guess, managing your emotions or your nerves when you're in the lead. It was just this horrible week where I'd gone to Miami expecting so much, and I'd say I finished fifth last in the event. Like, it was...
And was there a moment that led to that loss of confidence almost? What was it?
It just spiraled so quickly.
Yeah.
It went from being that I was on this super high level of confidence to I'd won bad race and I lost all my confidence. And it was probably a problem that I had throughout the rest of my career. It would take me so much to build my confidence up, and I could so easily lose it and then think that I was the worst in the world. But that event, even though it was probably like one of my lowest points, it was also a huge turning point for me as well, because I realized I had to start working with Kate, my sports psychologist, again. Then I guess that pivots to one of my best moments was 1 year later in Miami. I was terrified of going to Miami again because I'd had such a bad experience there, but Kate Kirby came with me this time, and we went to the event, and I had a completely different event. I sailed really well through the event, and I think I had such low expectations because I was like, anything better than last is going to be good here. And I just sailed well throughout the event, and I ended up finishing fourth overall, which at the time was my best result at a World Cup. So, you know, sometimes your worst things transfer into your best.
As she became more consistent, she was also better at dealing with the highs and lows because they were less extreme. Like, her bad races were less bad, but she also was able to kind of recover better because she knew she had the talent, the speed, the ability, the tactical awareness to just turn it around in the next race. So as her confidence grew, her ability to roll with the punches definitely increased.
The Tokyo Olympics is still probably my biggest disappointment.
Really?
I went there with so much expectation of myself and what I could do, and then I completely underperformed. Like, I just let myself get, even beforehand, looking back on it, I was like, I want to have won the Olympic gold medal before the medal races even happened, which is the most stupid thing to think ever. Like, sailing is a consistency sport. It's about having lots of okay races and maybe good races, that's how you win Olympic medals, which is how I'd done it in Rio and how I'd come so close to winning a medal in London. I had such a great opportunity. I was sailing so well. I was doing so many things really good. And I didn't perform. And I thought that I was older and wiser and was able to deal with pressure better. But the reality is, even as you get older and wiser, you still have the same sort of, the same things that have, you know, held you back at other moments in your career are going to come up again in big pressure moments. And if you don't have the right ways of dealing with them, you aren't going to be able to deal with it. And Tokyo didn't lend itself to that. Like Kate, my sports psychologist, she wasn't able to be down at the sailing venue because of the strict COVID rules. She was up in the Olympic Village. So I didn't have her. Well, in London and Rio, she was living with me. So I had someone to be like, stop thinking like that. That was probably where I missed out on, you know, not having someone to keep me in check when I was letting my mind sort of run away from me.
In terms of 2012, your interview straight away afterwards, you said, I think I'll always feel disappointed for the rest of my life. I'll always look back on what I could have done differently. 12 years on now, the bit of maturity that you talk about obviously comes into the picture. The how it informed success later in your career obviously might have been an aspect of that too. But how often do you think about that? Do you still foster those regrets about it? Do you think that was just part of my story?
I think it's definitely part of my story. And I'm able to look back on it and go, part of me thinks I wouldn't have won a medal in Rio if I'd won a medal in London. I might have just been satisfied with that. Like, maybe I wouldn't have gone to the lengths that I went to in Rio to be in the best possible shape. But then I also still look back on it with kind of nightmares, because I know how close I was to winning an Olympic gold medal. And I know how rare those opportunities are in life.
She kind of came in under the radar in London, like had never been tipped as a medal contender, really, and just came out of the blocks absolutely flying. And not, I wasn't surprised by it, because she had performed consistently that year and she knew Weymouth well and the conditions suited her. But we were all probably out of our depth when it came to being ready for a medal race and contending for a medal.
The Olympic regatta started really well. She won the first four races of the Olympic regatta. I don't know if that's been done by somebody else. You know, it's somewhere there in the history of starts to an Olympics.
I mean, in hindsight, I think maybe that was where, you know, the pressure of you know, the media, and I think she just got really nervous. She was only 21, so you know, she was quite young going to an Olympic Games.
I didn't perform badly. I was just unfortunate that three other women I was racing against also performed, probably like four of us performed at an excellent level, and that's that was kind of hard to take. I think it's part of the disappointment is, like, in 2011 I finished third at the World Cup event at the Olympic venue. And then just going into the Olympics, I just had this speed edge on everyone. I was faster. And when you're faster, you look like you're a genius. But maybe I wasn't a genius at all. I was just going faster than everyone. But then you start to think, like, how am I winning all these races? Like, and you tighten up a bit and you start overthinking. Instead of just making a split-second decision and just going with it, you're thinking about it for a couple of seconds, and it's those sort of hesitations are what mean that you actually end up back a bit in the race and suddenly you aren't at the front finding it as easy. Like, Rory will say it now that I was inconsolable. But that's because it meant so much to me. And I do sometimes think, like, you know, it needs, probably sport does need to mean that much to you to want to put in the work and the effort to do well in it.
Annelise was so sad, like, you know, she cried all the way in, and I think I actually felt sick, you know. I just thought, this is just like, it was so close as well, you know.
What I could say to Annelise then, I was thanking her for the adventure, for, you know, years of hard work. You know, a lot of the time you're asking somebody to do something that's very difficult. What they have to do is very hard. You know, it's the Olympic Games, it's It's the edge of what human beings can do, so you drive people very, very hard. So. But we had an adventure doing it, and I was thanking her for that. It wasn't too much about the moment of the race. It was about the 4 years, the 6 or 8 years prior to that. The moment I finished the race, we had that conversation thanking her, but I think Annalise cried for about 45 minutes afterwards, solid. I'd say she was dehydrated by the time we got back ashore. And it is like something died. They have a medal in their fingertips, and you know, when the memory of it comes round, the best way to describe it is haunting. You know, that moment, it lets you know that there's another standard that needs to be achieved. And it's very difficult to do, but it's something that is doable for somebody who comes fourth. And then they have a real big life decision if they're going to put themselves through it.
All that experience that I gained in London, I was able to use in Rio when I was in a similar situation going into a medal race. And to be able to have a totally different attitude. I had so much fear going into the London medal race of losing. While in Rio, I didn't have that fear. I knew you can go in and just be terrified and not perform and you're going to be very sad, or you can go and just try and race your best and be aware that people might be better than you on the day, but you can only go and do your best.
The medal in Rio, what was your... did you need that to legitimise the investment of time, to put London in the whatever sort of rearview mirror? Not quite, it turns out, but, you know, how much did you need that to legitimise things? I suppose if it didn't happen, what sort of space would you be in?
I don't know. Probably if it didn't happen, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation today. That is the reality of what an Olympic medal does to your life. They're so rare. It's that extra achievement that, I don't know, I think it would have meant I would have felt... I definitely feel that Olympic medal in Rio made my career really worth it. And I know you shouldn't define your happiness or success on results, but it's really hard. I've seen loads of good friends put their lives into the Olympic Games, and they had the potential to win Olympic medals and they didn't.
The formation of the direction for Rio was actually quite difficult, because the technical skill set of Annalise was very well suited for London, but Rio was a completely different kettle of fish. It was a much, much higher demand.
The year of Rio, she was having a lot of really bad events. Like her head, you know, she convinced herself that Rio was going to be a light weather regatta and that she wouldn't be able to do well in it.
Person after person was coming up to her like at a funeral saying, "Oh, it looks like it's going to be light at the next Olympics, so I'm really sorry about that." And it's basically everybody telling you that you can't do something. The first time we went to Rio, then it was light. And Annalise didn't like it. We had to reform and reshape and completely adapt to what that venue demanded, and that didn't come easy.
Annalise really embraced that element of teamship. And I think people might be surprised by that in a single-handed sailing event where you're out on the water on your own. You don't even talk to your coach during the race and you know, not for 6 minutes before the race. It was so important to her to have that team. Annalise and Rory's coaching relationship went on for 15 years. I worked with her on and off for a similar amount of time, which just helped that feeling of being a part of something bigger than yourself.
So we spent a huge amount of time then in Brazil. We were over and back more than anybody, I think, except the gold medalist. Maybe got a few more days than us, but we had about 130 days there. And we figured out the different race courses, some through weather modelling, some through our own experience, some through giving the local coach a few too many beers at the bar. He'll spill the beans on the tidal flows, you know. We knew the place better than anybody. We were doing a regatta there and I was thinking, Jesus, I think we've got this.
You know, we had a meeting and she was able to say, "I'm so scared. What if I come fourth again?" You know, like, so we were able to go, okay, well, let's look back at what you learned from your experience in London. And like Rory, in fairness, had a whole list of the debrief notes ready to go. He had them and he said, like, "This is in your own words here. What would you do if you could do the race again?" And she said, "I would seek the opportunity to win, not fear losing."
the podium in Rio was, I was so happy and so relieved. Because that is, I think that is, you know, when you do actually finally achieve something, it's that sense of relief that I've actually done it and no one can take it away from me. Well, up until that point, particularly in sailing, like our competitions are so long, they go on for 6 days. Every day there's a chance for you just to throw it all away. Well, once I was there on the podium in Rio, I knew no one could be like, actually, we've changed our mind, we can take that away from you. I was like, it's mine now.
The biggest thing for me was the performance that was put on the water. It was everything that people said you couldn't do. So this is what I was saying to Annalise. I was like, they said you couldn't do this. Nobody believed this was possible. I think her odds were about 100 to 1, you know, in Paddy Power to medal, because she had finished last the previous year in the test event. And I was yelling at her at the way in. It's like, you proved them wrong, you did everything. For a coach, it's the performance, because that's all the work. That's the skills. That's what you're trying to get them to achieve. So what was put out on the water there was, you know, it was exceptional. It was that edge of what a human can do,
you know. You know, we've won medals in Ireland, and I don't think people really appreciate how difficult they are to get, you know. Especially in a little country like Ireland. The budget that they have in England for sailing is the budget of all our sports. You know, and the same goes like for their cycling teams. Like, there's just so much money invested into, you know, their Olympic performance sports. We actually do punch above our weight for the size of country that we are.
Coming to a greater awareness of what it takes to be a medalist at world level, when they learn that, they also recognise the amount of self-interested decisions that entails. And it is a thing athletes struggle with. They struggle with, you know, missing important milestones in their friends and family's lives. They struggle with, you know, being the one who dictates family plans, family holidays, all those kinds of things.
I do think that's the personality that you end up having as a successful sports person, is you are kind of ruthless and quite selfish. You don't mean to be, but like, I look back and I try and not be a selfish person, but I think the only reason that I probably got my success is because I am kind of selfish to say, like, oh yeah, you know, anyone who's an Olympic champion isn't selfish. They 100, you have to be. You have to prioritize yourself above everything else. And it's, I guess it was a real eye opener for me. It probably made me realize you have to be way more aware of how other people feel. You know, I just presumed everyone had the same brain as me, and that's not the case at all. I love competing. I think I love competing in anything. You know, if there's like a finish line or something, it's what excites me in life.
Part of the Allianz campaign is in relation to Stop the Drop and kids giving up sport between primary school and secondary school. What's your experience of that?
It's like something I'm really passionate about, is trying to keep girls in sport, particularly as they're going through being through teenage years, and then even still on after school and into college, because like, there's just so much sort of research out there to show how much confidence sports give you, how much resilience it gives you, like how you don't have to be a professional sports person to get all the benefits out of doing sport on a regular basis, and then it helping you in every other aspect of your life, you know, in your career, in your relationships, in your sort of mental health. It's really, really important, and it's you know, it's trying to, I guess, keep sport fun for girls and keep encouraging them to stay in it, which is hard. Like, it's generally, I don't really know like that many boys that drop out of sports when they're teenagers. Generally, they start taking up more sports or putting more time into it. Well, a lot of girls, they do drop out of sports when they're teenagers, maybe to focus more on their studies. But there's a lot of evidence to show that actually it's better for, you know, if you're busy doing sports and your study, it's nearly better. Well, if you're just focusing on one thing, that's not so good. I think sailing, I found that was my sport. Like, I had so much freedom doing it, and I loved the fact that as an 11-year-old, I was given a boat and I could just go off and go wherever I wanted. I was off sailing around the harbour, you know, seeing things. Like, no one could tell me that I needed to go somewhere else, which is, it's a rare thing that you're given so much freedom at such a young age. Yeah, I would just say that it's really important to keep girls in sport. It is, and it's a really difficult thing to do as well. And then also just hammering down the importance of how much you get out of it as well. And mainly, if nothing else, the friendships.
Kathy's back in the scene. She slides you across an A4 bit of paper and a pencil and she says, next 10 years, Annalise, draw the pictures. What are they?
I don't know. I'd love to have found whatever my next sort of passion is, something that gets me up in the morning, that makes me excited to want to do it. I'd love to help, I guess, the next generation of Olympians, particularly in sailing. We've got such a talented group coming through now and loads of great kids coming up through the system as well. So I definitely want to try and give back as much as I can, because you gain so much knowledge over your years of Olympic campaigning, and I wouldn't want that just to all go to waste.
It's all encompassing when you're in it, and when people move on from it, you know, they may need time to find what their new purpose is.
One of the things I really like about Annalise is just she never sees the barriers to things. Like, she rarely look at a challenge and go like, oh no, I couldn't do that, or, you know, that's impossible. So I just don't think it's in her nature to just settle and live this life of kind of certainty and I don't know, relative predictability. I think she always likes to see what's possible.
I guess anyone who's watching who is dreaming about, you know, doing something in sport, whatever level, it's like, just go for it. Like, you, first of all, you have to have crazy dreams. Like, you can't, you know, like, Olympic medals, they are crazy dreams. That's how they start out, and then maybe you get something out of them, and you'll never look back on it and regret, oh, I wish I hadn't done that. Like, even though, you know, now I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do with my life, which is kind of difficult, I still have no regrets about the life that I got from being a full-time athlete. Just give it a go. Like, you'll never regret it. And even if it doesn't work out over a few years, what you'll have gained from trying it is going to make you be very successful in whatever you do later on in life.